I'm Joa Riley, and this is SEO in 2024.
Joa, what's your number one SEO tip for 2024?
My number one SEO tip for 2024 is to stop building huge numbers of low quality, irrelevant links, and instead really focus your effort on building a smaller number of quality, relevant links.
Why?
Okay, so because we can all go out and we can build loads and loads of links, but ultimately Google is probably going to start to disregard them when they realize that they're not really relevant to your business, to your niche, that, you know, potentially you're not building them in quite the way Google wants. You're doing kind of paid for link building, or you're doing other kind of manipulative link building that Google does not really value and want to encourage you to do. So you're wasting your time, you're wasting your money, and you're wasting your energy. You could focus that energy on building a smaller number of quality links relevant to you, relevant to the users that are going to be using your website, and Google hopefully reward you for that effort.
What would be an example of an irrelevant spammy link?
An irrelevant spammy link. Okay, we see this a lot in some of the more difficult niches to do SEO in. So gambling, those kind of online crypto sites, it's really hard to do SEO in. We see them doing, you know, lots of really kind of voluminous kind of link building or voluminous kind of digital PR. And they will do anything to get a link. They will talk about any subject to get a link, despite the fact it might not really be relevant to their niche or to their business. When you see kind of an online gambling firm talking about, I don't know, like motor vehicles, or talking about kind of days out, or things that just aren't really relevant to it, what it is they're actually selling as a service, or what it is they're providing to visitors to their website.
And a spammy link, would you just define that as links that are completely irrelevant as well?
Yeah, or links that are kind of built en masse using kind of dodgy black hat, grey hat tactics.
Got you, okay. And let's move on to the relevant, the high quality links now. So how would you define that?
I would define that by, you know, finding something that is really relevant to users of your website, and, you know, building links talking about content that is relevant to the people that would be naturally going to your website anyway. You know, your customer base, whoever that may be, talking about stuff that you have real expertise or experience. We've got the extra E in it now. So expertise, experience, and authority, and stuff that you can talk about with authority that is going to increase that trust in what you're doing on your page, what the page that's linking to you is doing. That kind of the overall kind of eat strategy of looking at how you build relevant links.
So how do you measure the potential value of a link?
Oh, this is difficult. So we know that we've got the kind of metrics, the kind of the various metrics, your DRs and your DAs, and we know that I've used them in the past. I have clients that use them. We all know that they exist, but we don't want to use them alone. We want to have a more holistic view of links, I think, going forward. We can't just say that, you know, we know that DA, for example, and DR, we know that these things can be gamed and they can be manipulated. So we don't want to use them as our only benchmark for what a quality link is. You want to be looking at a link more holistically. We know Google's getting better at doing this, and we you know, in the industry, we assume Google's going to get smarter at doing this, probably with the help of AI and other things that it's employing itself to ascertain the value and relevance of a link. So you have to be quite clever and look at each link individually and try and work out really what Google wanted links to be originally. Is this relevant? Is this showing a source? Is this adding more context, more information to a user's journey? You know, we forget sometimes kind of the history of links. We use them now as an SEO tool. We forget the history of them, that was, they are citations. If you think back to the original idea of them coming from kind of the way you would reference things in an academic paper. We want to go back to that. We want to go back to that kind of holistic way of a link being something useful that adds context, that adds extra clarity, or it adds a trust marker to a website.
So by holistically, do you mean position within the piece of content and also things like likely traffic of the website and the webpage?
Yes and no, but I think I try and stay away from talking about traffic, particularly in what I do in digital PR. I can't promise you that a link is necessarily going to bring through loads of traffic. you know, I wouldn't want to sell a kind of a service around links with traffic in mind. I think that's very hard to predict that. But more kind of, when I say looking holistically, more how useful it is in, you know, where it's placed in the content, again, can be useful. It's not something that necessarily is something that I think would, I don't know if that would be a huge quality marker for a link in my opinion. I would be looking more for how useful it is and what it shows me about a piece of content and the person providing that content and that information. You know, I really like it when I see links to About Us pages. If I've got an expert in news article telling me something, I like if that link will take me somewhere that will tell me, why am I listening to this person? Why are they an expert in what they are telling me? Particularly when you're talking about your money, your life sites. If someone's giving me health information or if someone's telling me what to do with my finances, I want to know why I'm listening to them and why their advice is worth me taking on board. So stuff that takes me somewhere where I can check someone's credentials, that to me is a really good link.
What about links from author bios at the bottom of guest blog articles? Are they still worthwhile nowadays?
Yeah, I mean, again, if it shows you that the author is an expert in what they're talking about, that's absolutely valuable. You know, author pages, you know, whether they be on guest posts, whether they be on kind of, you know, publications, we see a lot of newspapers do this. You want to know that someone has spoke about this subject before, has, you know, a vested interest in this topic because it's something that they have an academic background in or they have a business background in. It is, again, that kind of that version of why is this person the right person for me to get this information from.
And what about links from digital PR activities? Is it still likely that multiple press organizations are going to link to you if they like a press release that you've distributed to them?
I hope so. But I think, you know, the onus is really on me to ensure that the campaigns I'm doing are relevant, that I'm not doing campaigns for a client that have absolutely nothing to do with what a client's overall business is or what their expertise is. I expect that with the kind of that digital PR is getting busier, right? There are more of us and there are less journalists. We say this a lot. It's a real hard nut to crack these days, digital PR. So I would expect there to be a higher expectation from the press that when I present a campaign for a client, or I do some news jacking where I send expertise from a client when a news story breaks, that client is really relevant to the news story, that they have real expertise, that they have a real background in the subject that I am putting forward content from them in. So it's all the same. It is all that expertise. Are they an expert? Do they have experience in this? Do they have the authority? And can I trust them talking about this?
So if an SEO was leaning towards more creative activities and they were interested in incorporating more digital PR elements into what they did, what are one or two of the things that they should learn first? I mean, should they, for instance, build a database of thought leaders within a particular sector? Should they master things like newsjacking, like you talked about, or something else?
Yeah, I mean, newsjacking is a great thing to master. It is it's hard work, right? I wouldn't want to sit here and pretend it's an easy thing to learn. It is a great thing if you've got, particularly if you work with some, you know, experts in your area. If you're an SEO for a site that works with insurance experts, we know there are always news stories, for example, that need the opinion of an insurance expert. If you've got those people and you're already using them on site and they're offering pages for you already, absolutely using that off page to build links and to build, you know, to build that expertise and that kind of brand as well. You've got to remember the brand element of this, definitely. And again, look for the, you know, going back to you're talking about finding thought leaders, go and find who is writing about your space. Whatever space you're in, whatever niche you're in, there'll probably be journalists who are dedicated to that. You know, if that's skincare, you know, if you're in the skincare, you'll work with dermatologists or a skincare brand, go and find those beauty journalists that their job is day in, day out, writing about skincare and build those relationships with them. And then when they need comment, when they need expertise, you want them to be coming to you. If you're going to be doing campaigns in skincare, you want to then be able to send that to these journalists and know that they are going to trust you. They're going to print this, they're going to put this on their website, and they're going to link back to you.
I feel that email spam is on the rise again. How do you conduct outreach nowadays to cut through the noise and actually get someone to listen to what you're proposing?
Yes, and one of the things we hear back from journalists all the time is they are inundated. Before I became a digital PR, I was a journalist myself, and you know, this was many years ago, before digital PR was a thing in the way it is now, and I would get 300 emails a day. I speak to journalists now that have been on holiday, been on annual leave for a day, and they're coming back to inboxes full of thousands of emails. That's overwhelming and scary to think about. You know, again, cutting through that noise is by not sending out irrelevant press releases, not sending out content or, you know, expert quotes that you've generated on ChatGPT that are not really providing expert analysis, that aren't trustworthy. You've just got to really be on top of doing, you know, the best you can, sending out really high quality stuff and to the relevant people. If you're a motoring journalist and I'm sending you a skincare campaign, for example, you're not interested and going to get you blocked. No one wants that in their inbox. You really want to spend the time understanding who is covering your niche, who is writing about it, who is interested in it, and not just kind of blanket spam every journalist in the US, in the UK, with every campaign you do. It's not going to be relevant to them. You're going to clog up their inbox and you're going to annoy everyone.
Is it ever worthwhile paying for links?
I don't think so. I don't think it's that, you know, we could all sit here and be squeaky clean about this. I know that people do it. I know that it works. I don't think it's a long-term strategy. Just because something works in the short term, I don't necessarily think there is, you know, that is the right long-term strategy. There are lots of things in digital PR that you can do that get you a really quick win. I'm not sure about the longevity of them, you know. Talk about kind of spamming people that, you know, I sent a press release I was working on to every single journalist without doing my kind of due diligence and looking into whether it was relevant, probably would still maybe get a link or two out of it. I'm not going to do that because that short-term win isn't worth the long-term damage it does to my reputation as a PR to, you know, I think there are things that work in the short term, and we all know that they work in the short term. I'm not sure what the long-term value of it is, and I wouldn't suggest it as a strategy.
How do you go about determining the links that you would like to get? Do you do, for instance, research on your competitors or something else to actually define who the ideal link opportunity is?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, we can use tools, Majestic, to go and look at like what competitors have got, what they've got in their links. And I like to do it one of two ways. I want to see where competitors are getting links to or links from, rather, and seeing if we can go and get those links as well. But also kind of really looking for the gaps. Who aren't our competitors getting links from? And can we get links there? And, you know, I see a lot of people chase the kind of the big national links. We want to get, you know, we want to be in the BBC or the New York Times or these kind of really big wins in our digital PR world. But actually some of the most powerful links in terms of their SEO impact can be a lot more niche links. You know, these kind of smaller specialist websites, getting links from them, you know, that kind of hyper relevancy, if you will, can actually have a lot more powerful an SEO impact, even with a lower DA or a lower quality score than kind of big sites. So don't be kind of clouded by this idea of getting the big glamorous links all the time. Look for the really, really hyper relevant niche links.
If an SEO is struggling for time, what should they stop doing right now so they can spend more time doing what you suggest in 2024?
So I would say if an SEO is struggling for time, I would stop. And they want to build links. I'm going to keep focused on links. If an SEO is struggling for time, I would say they want to stop sending out thousands and thousands of outreach emails, trying to build links that way, and really focus on just kind of building on-site content that is link-worthy and sending it out to a smaller number of really relevant journalists.
Is there any software that you would recommend for reaching out to people, or is it best done on a manual basis?
I think the best outreach is done manually. You can buy software with names of journalists, but I think that, yeah, it is expensive and it does save time, but I think the best outreach is done by manual research.
Jo O'Reilly is a digital PR consultant. You can find her over at Jo O'Reilly on LinkedIn. Jo, thanks so much for being part of SEO in 2024.
Thank you so much.
I've been your host, David Bain. Get your copy of SEO in 2024, the book, over at SEOin2024.com.